another day, another dollar makes you wonder where you.
Hi, this is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times and what we can do to prepare for it so you can live a better life, whether times get really tough or even if they don't. It's all about planning a lifestyle that gives you the greatest satisfaction and being prepared for the worst so you can live good if it gets tough, or even if it stays the way that it is, you're still going to live better. Yesterday, I did a podcast that was supposed to be on, at least in my head, was going to be on selecting a qualified financial advisor for the average person, and some of the challenges that there are there. Because I do believe that proper survival planning is part, part of proper survival planning is financial planning, and it's important. I don't see, as bad as things are, I don't see a day when having money isn't going to matter, when the dollar is so worthless that it's completely and totally nothing but a piece of paper. And even if that occurs, I think that we will have pretty good signs and you'll have an opportunity to convert your dollars into something else. And maybe you shouldn't have all dollars right now, but we'll get into that. I do want to make a correction. I already posted this when I posted yesterday's podcast, but I made a, stated a date yesterday of Tax Freedom Day as being April 18th. That must have been a prior date that was somehow stuck in my head. This year, the Tax Freedom Day was actually April 23rd, so if you listened to me rant yesterday about taxation and working for the government for all those days, when you hear my anger in that podcast, just add an additional 5 days onto it, and you know, then we're square. So it's actually worse than I said by a little bit. Anyway, I'm not going to get into any of that, because if I do, we'll end up with another podcast that goes off with Jack's view of why our government is just making a mess of things, and that's not going to get this agenda taken care of. I do think it's an important one. What I want to talk about before I go into the things you need to do with finding a good financial advisor for yourself is what I call the common man's financial advisor catch-22. Now, catch-22, is pretty well known by most people, but if you're not familiar with the term, what it basically means is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. That there's, it's like a catch-22 with a bank. Is a bank is a place that you go to borrow money and you can prove that you don't need money. That's how it used to be anyway, back, you know, before we started throwing money at people and destroying the housing market. And what I mean about a catch-22 with a financial advisor is I want to try to help you figure out how to find the very best financial advisor for your needs, but at the same time, I have to be honest with you about what I know about the industry, what I've learned about the industry from working in it and from working with entrepreneurs, some of whom are very wealthy, who I said, hey, man, who's your guy? And tried to hire their guy, and they're just so far ahead of me in wealth that their guy can't even take me if he wants to based on the way he does business. The government wouldn't let him. And second of all, he wouldn't be able to serve me because I don't have a $2 million portfolio. So the way he does things is completely different. So what that means is your catch-22 is you're never going to get the best that's available. If you're sitting on, you know, no money and you're putting in a few hundred dollars a month and you're just getting started, if you're sitting on $50,000 and continuing to contribute, if your asset portfolio is $250,000 or even $500,000, believe it or not, you're not going to get the best. In fact, the guy with a $500,000 portfolio is probably not going to be able to get any better of an advisor than the guy with a $50,000 portfolio. Because that whole demographic, that whole market, that whole sub-$1 million net worth market is served by the same people. And you may think, well, damn, that's kind of depressing, and, you know, what opportunities do I have out there? You know, a good financial advisor is still a valuable asset. And what I'm going to talk to you about today, some of my opinions about investing and how to protect and manage your investments, and how to find a good financial advisor to do that with. And I always say this when I talk about money matters, and maybe I have to get one of those fancy disclaimers, but I am not in the business of dispensing professional financial advice. You make your own decisions, and you should do that with a qualified investment advisor. This podcast is always just one man's opinion. It's not a lecture. It's advice. It's advice on how to do things for yourself and how to empower yourself. When it comes down to making that final decision about where to put your money, you have to make that decision in conjunction with whomever you choose to make it with. Please understand that. So I think that the first steps that you can make in finding a good financial advisor don't involve looking for one, talking to one, getting near one, or asking anybody for anybody's name, okay? Start out with yourself, because the good advisor out there that serves this class of investor, all right, is not there to define your priorities for you and to set agendas for you. You do that, and then he is supposed to give you options to get as close to what you want as he can get you there. All right. So my belief is the first thing you need to do is define your priorities, and I mean all of your priorities. Starting out with your risk tolerance. Do you want to risk it for big returns? Are you the kind of person that really wants to do what most of these guys are going to advise you to do, which is throw most of your investment into tax-deferred, you know, Roth IRAs, tax-deferred annuities, all these things that you can't touch until you're 60 years old that are going to be there for a very, very long time? You know, and your age is going to change that question as well, but no matter how old you are, you have to ask yourself, do I want most of my investment tied up for the long term? Personally, I don't. I want a significant portion, but I also want a much larger portion, and we get into buckets, I'll talk about that, but I want a good-sized chunk of money available to me without being penalized for taking my own money out. So I'll put some into that tax-deferred status or tax-exempt status, and I put some into standard investments that I can go liquidate if I want to without paying a 25% penalty. That's true that I'll pay taxes on the gains on those assets, but at least they're available to me to do things like buy a second home, which I did several years ago. Without keeping that money out and away and available to myself, I would not have had that option, or at least I wouldn't have had the option to be able to do that in a way that made the most sense for me and keep very low debt against that property. So define your priorities first. Second, write a budget. Do not go see a financial advisor without a budget in hand that shows your current income and your current expenses. And spend a month writing this budget, folks. Make sure you get everything, all your expenses in there. You buy a burger at McDonald's, make sure it's in there. And continue to build and track your budget. That's good to do anyway. And then defining your own buckets. This is what I was talking with you about just a second ago. The typical spiel from these guys, and I'm going to talk about their training here a little bit so that you understand the psychology of what's going on their end, and that will let you, you know, manage them a little bit better, because I believe you're employing a financial advisor, okay? They're not taking you on. You're employing them, just like I employ employees. And you don't employ an employee and then say, do whatever you like. You bring an employee into a situation and you give them a given level of management. So your financial advisor may help manage your finances, but you manage him. Understand that right now. And part of that, you're going to start out initially with this bucket mentality. Here's the bucket mentality. What they mean by this is just an allocation of how you save money. And what the typical allocations they tell you is, okay, the first thing you should do is save enough money in like a basic savings account to cover 3 months of your expenses and income, okay? So if you lost a job, if both of you, you know, if you're married, if both of you lost a job, if the world ended, you can pay all your bills for at least 90 days. Now, there's definitely a good reason to do that. I just think that you need more than 90 days because nobody can foretell the future here. The other thing about that is you'll find this, you know, if you really look at what they actually do after they say that, if you don't have 90 days worth of savings, they don't say, okay, we'll keep putting your money in there. They still immediately start talking about how to allocate your long-term investments because that's what they get paid to do, is sell you that, all right? And you can go in and talk to people who are fee-based, which is basically they just give you advice for a fee every year. And sometimes those guys, and I don't really care how they get paid. The mentality behind this and how they're trained by the parent company is all of these guys. Even when they say they're independent, they have some brokerage house or parent company that they represent that's behind them that's trained them. All right? So understand that they're going to tell you you put this much money in your regular savings, and then you have a fund that's like for your, you know, fun stuff and your toys and just to buy things with, and then you have another place, and that's your retirement. And you should try to get to a point where you're putting 15% of your income into that retirement bucket. And remember, if you do it the way they tell you, that 15% is gone until you're 59 and a half or older. All right? And they'll say, even sometimes they'll sub-bucket that. And what I mean they'll say is, okay, in this retirement, we have things like tax-deferred annuities, we have things like Roth IRAs, we have things like you had an old conventional IRA that we couldn't roll over. So the Roth we never pay taxes on, so that's like our never money. We'll never touch that. You'll die with that money still in there. And it's like, maybe I don't want to die with that money still in there. Maybe I want to spend that money when I'm old. So, you have to, like, rein these guys back in. But it starts out with defining your own buckets. What do you want to do in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years before you retire? How much money do you need for that? Use that to define the allocation of your buckets. I'm not talking about the allocation of your money, like X dollars in stocks, X dollars in bonds. I'm talking about the classification. Is it a bank? Okay, is it in hard assets like gold sitting in a safety deposit box? Is it in cash, straight up cash, you keep some cash on hand? Where do you want your money? Define those buckets in advance. I'm not saying you won't change them after you get some advice, but have an idea what you want. Write it down. Walk in with that list of priorities, your written budget, and defining your own buckets, all right? That will get you off to a great start with any good financial advisor. And what it might do is it might take some of these guys that aren't really very good at all, and it might scare them away. And if that scares them away, then you're doing a filtering process. So let's say you've gotten through that process, and you're now actively talking to potential advisors. And you've walked in, and you've sat down, and you've talked to them. And generally, they want to do the whole, I want to get to know you, build relationships thing, understand your priorities and your assets that you currently have and how much you make and what you want to do when you retire. Well, you know, shortcut that BS. Shortcut the bullshit. That's why I want you to walk in there with priorities defined. I want you to walk in there with a written budget. And I want you to walk in there with your buckets to find. Because you don't give a crap about that, because he doesn't really give a crap about you, because he's never met you before. Now, you may establish a business relationship, and long term, that may turn into a personal relationship. Don't be fooled by a sales technique here, though. This guy doesn't give a damn about you, or this lady doesn't give a damn about you as an individual, okay, on any real level. Now, most people care about other people intrinsically. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying this whole crap about I want to know your kids, I want to know your kids' activities, BS. They want to close the deal, okay? It's what they're trained to do. It's how they run their business. There's nothing wrong with it. So what I'm saying is shortcut the crap and get down to the meat. You walk in with that and say, here's my priorities. They can get to know you by listening to your priorities, how you want to allocate things, and what your goals are. That will get them the same thing without the touchy-feely BS and some so stupid sense of obligation. And I hate to put this on women, but women a lot of times, you go talk to a guy like this, and then we leave, and you come back, and it's just, you know, I kind of feel like we should do something with him because he took so much time for us. Now, his job is to take time to prove to you that he's worthy of the job. This is a job interview. You are the employer. And you talk to more than one of these guys. You do not go see one, say you got a good feeling, and hire the guy. You talk to at least 3, if not 4. If you're smart, 5 or 6, okay? If you don't know where to find one, go to a local chamber of commerce meeting, kick a table, 5 or 6 of them will crawl out from underneath it. There's plenty of them out there, all right? So, what I'm saying is make sure that when you walk in, you're there with that mentality, and then when you start getting recommendations, when you start saying, I think this, or I think that, I think we're at the bottom of this recession, I think we're 80% through it, 50%, why? The number one question you should be using is why. Why do you feel that way? What indicators do you have that that's right? What facts do you have that's right? The guy recommends a stock to you. When's the next earnings report due out on that stock? What does their income look like this year compared to last year? And go get that information for yourself. Go to Google Finance, Yahoo Finance. Look up any stock. Look up any fund. Look up what's going on with it. Do not just accept, I say this, this, and this. Why, and why? And then when they give you an answer, ask why again. Be 8 years old. You're entitled to ask these questions. Make sure that it's not gut. If it is gut, I just mentioned on another podcast, I interviewed a guy. I'm going to hire him, I think. I'm waiting to see his final recommendations on some things. But I actually hit it off with the guy. Well, when I pushed him on why, he said, it's my gut. I said, I respect that. I appreciate that. I don't trust it. Okay? So you don't worry about your gut. Let's work with facts. He was willing to do that. I'm willing to work with him. So you're never going to find a, you know, it's just like a marriage. You always have to compensate a little bit for each other. But I want you to understand why. You always ask why. Keep doing it. Keep pushing them. Make them explain to you. Make sure you understand what you're being told. Okay, the next thing I think you really need to do is you need to understand the training these guys get. You really need to understand the training these guys get. because if you don't, you're going to get manipulated. And it's not that the guy's a bad guy or the lady's a bad lady, all right? It's not that. I want you to be very clear. If you're a financial advisor and you're listening to this and this is bothering you, I'm sorry, man. This is the way it is. I understand your industry. I've seen it. I was almost part of it at one time, and I just decided it wasn't for me because I dissected it and understood these things. These people are trained to talk investors off the ledge. And what I mean by that is when you call your broker and say, I want to get out of stocks, I don't care what's going on, he's going to tell you not to. He's going to tell you, let's not do that. He'll say, well, if we're going to do anything, let's move to a different classification. Let's not go into just pure cash. There's a reason. He believes that. In most instances, he's drank the Kool-Aid. He believes that he's been indoctrinated by the parent company. The parent companies need the market to be somewhat stable. If enough Americans pull their money out of the market, and this is a risk with the baby boomers, and they're already gearing up the marketing to keep the baby boomers in the market longer, I'm telling you, because they want people to stay in. Because when money comes out, the market comes down. That's just the way it works. The market is fed by investment. You reduce the investment, okay, the market drops. So if every broker house trains all their investment advisors, all their stock brokers, all their everybody that's out there talking to Joe Consumer, the middle class that never gets the best advisor but makes up the bulk of the investment because there's so many of us, stay in. It creates a certain amount of stability in the market. It creates a certain amount of upward pressure in the market. And business is better for the individual broker house. Okay? It's better for the individual mutual fund company. They need money to make money. They need money to stabilize and increase the market. So every one of these guys is trained to keep people invested. Now, I'm not saying in a malicious way. They generally do the best job they can with what they know and what they understand and within their abilities to have you invested in the best way possible if you're going to be invested in the stocks. But you gotta understand that training. These guys are not trained to be financial analysts. They're trained to sell through relationship selling to people who need investment advice. Most of the actual advice does not come from them. It comes from their home office, their parent company, the broker that they work for, what have you. Okay? So they take whatever data you give them, they pass it on. They're more of an intermediary than a direct advisor. And that's good. It's good in a way because you don't want to rely on one man's opinion when you're investing money. All right? You just don't. You need those experts back there, so that's a good thing. The bad part of that, though, is you have institutional control over what you personally think is one-on-one investing advice. That's your guy, okay? Your guy could be gone tomorrow. They'll replace him, all right? They'll replace him like that overnight. You'll have a new guy, and he'll tell you the same thing. He's been trained that way. Everything you do with your advisor, from the day you interview them to the day you decide you don't want to work with them anymore or they end up burning out and quitting, which many of them do, you manage, you control, and you do that with the knowledge that they've been trained to keep the average investor in the market. Know that or don't get one. Because if you don't know that, if you don't believe that, you're going to just end up falling for whatever they say because they'll tell you it with complete belief because most of them believe every word they're saying. They're not dishonest people. They want to help you. They just may not be going about it in a way that's best for your personal needs. So again, you've hired them. They are your employee. Train them to serve you the way you wish to be served. Control and manage them like the employee that they are. Make them earn their money. All right? So let's move on from there. Make sure you press them to meet what you want. I've kind of covered this already, so I won't go into it too deep, but you really do. You want to press your advisor to put a plan together that meets your wants, your needs, and your desires. Because when they say, I want to understand your needs and desires, what they mean is, I want to put all your numbers into a calculation and tell you how much money to invest over here. That's not meeting your wants and desires. Again, you've defined your own buckets. Make sure that they understand, hey, you know what, no matter what you say about how much I should put X into this deferred retirement crap, I'm not doing it. Because I have short-term plans for some of my money beyond just the money that I'm putting in a bank account or I'm holding in cash underneath my mattress. and I want to do certain things, and I need money allocated for that, and you are going to build me a plan that does that, or I am going to find an advisor who will. Do not be afraid to tell these people that. That will get them to do what you need. If you hired a person to work for you at your job, you would say, I need the following done. And if they said, I don't think that's a good idea, you would say, I don't very well care what you think is a good idea. It's what you've been hired to do. Treat your advisor the same way. And eventually, you guys will probably get along really good. You'll become one of his best clients. Again, I may have already said this also, but during the interview process, interview several, 3, 4, 5 of these guys. I'm telling you, they're all over the place. There's millions of them out there. Ask them how long they've been doing it. I hate to put it this way. I really do. I hate to say, don't give the new guy a chance. Because I've been in startup business opportunities where I've been like, you're going to be my first customer. And people are like, man, you haven't proven yourself yet. All right? But in this industry, these guys turn over so fast. And if you're out there interviewing people, you have your pick of the litter, so to speak. I'm more comfortable with a guy that's been in the industry and he's made it 18 months to 24 months before I give him a shot at managing for me. Just because if he does do a good job, I want him to be there long term. I'm looking for a long term relationship with my financial advisor, okay? If I got a good guy, I don't want to have to go somewhere else. And I don't want a guy that's going to go under. And these guys have massive failure rates in their first 18 months. Massive. They get a very small retainer, usually, as part of their deal for the first year. They usually figure out how to survive on that. And a lot of them go straight commission after that. And if they haven't built up a portfolio by then, it gets very hard. And then most people can only make it about 6 months. And they just go, I'm not making enough money to survive. I'm trying to advise people on how to get wealthy, and I'm living poor. So they go out and they find another way to earn income. And it's not anything against them. It's a tough industry. There's so many of them. It's so competitive. People don't want to talk about it. People don't want to be advised by financial advisors for the most part. They just want to throw their money in their 401k and believe it's all going to be okay and forget about it. All right? So, you know, understand that and just make sure that you're interviewing several and you're asking them how long that they've been there. Once you hire one, I want you to learn what we knew in the Army. The squeaky wheel gets degrees, and you are supposed to be the squeaky wheel. Call your broker every time you get a statement. Every time you get a statement, say, hey, I just got my last statement. Let me fax you a copy if you don't have one. Let's go over it together right now. I want to know where things are going, how they got there, and what we should do next. If you're going to tell me to just stay put, that's fine. You explain to me why. You do that every time a statement comes in. If he doesn't like it, find somebody else. I'm sorry, that's your job. If you're a financial advisor, you go, man, I don't want all my clients calling me every time a statement shows up. Don't worry, they're not going to, because most of them won't. But the people that listen to this podcast that think the way that I think, do it. Call him. He gets annoyed with you. He doesn't seem like he wants to do it. Start dodging your call. Every 90 days you're trying to get him on the phone, he's suddenly not around. Get rid of him. Get a new one. That's their job. So be the squeaky wheel. Make sure you're talking to your broker minimum 4 times a year. I say at least 6 every other month. Let's have a conversation about the way things are. You know, make sure he's in touch with what's going on. You pay attention to the market, right? And if he doesn't seem like he's in touch with what you're in touch with, it's time to start looking elsewhere, all right? Again, these are employees. Manage them like employees, all right? Again, I am a big believer not to let these guys put you into things that are 100% all tax deferred that lock your money away until you're 60, especially when you're 20. It's great. These programs that the government's actually gotten out of the way of the investor and said, we will tax your money until you retire, or we'll let you pay taxes and then that money's yours and you do whatever you want with it and you make all the money you want with. You take it out when you retire, we'll never tax you. They're great programs. You should use them. You should put lots of money into them. And you should really take advantage of them. But if you're taking all of your investment and putting it there, 100% of your investment and putting it there, and you lose your job, you're going to have to pay a 25% penalty to get the money out to cover you in the shortfall. Okay? And that 30 days you have saved up may not be enough to make it 6 months, which may end up where you're at. It may not make it a year, which is, I know people that lost jobs during the dot-com bust, and it took a year to find another job. And then you may not, when you take that first job, you may have to make a career change. And you know what? If you have money saved, and, you know, let's say you were living on a $60,000 a year income, and you could find a job and it only pays $45,000, but you can supplement $15,000 over a year out of your savings to cover your shortfall of your budget until you establish yourself and you can either ask that employer for a raise, or now that you've built up some background in that, you can take that and your other experience and go find a job that pays. All of these things require that money be available, that you don't, you know, this borrowing from yourself, terrible idea when you're borrowing from yourself with these types of tax deferred programs. If you don't pay them back in 60 days, you get nailed. They're designed for a short-term shortfall, and you can't plan on that being what happens if you have a job loss. We have an economic disaster, which is also possible. So just be leery of being put into 100% tax-deferred stuff, all right? Just, like I said, from the very beginning, to find your own buckets. Another thing I'll tell you, Dave Ramsey and I do not agree on everything. Dave Ramsey, if you don't know him, he's a guy that's syndicated on the radio. He's on TV a lot. He's an investment guy, and if you Google Dave Ramsey, R-A-M-S-E-Y, you'll find his site, and you can listen to his philosophy. What we don't agree on is Dave is one of these guys that always just buy good mutual funds and let it go, all right? That's his investment advice, and I'm not big on that. But on his advice on, you know, not going into highly leveraged real estate deals, if you want a rental property, figure out how to buy it, pay for it, own it, and then make income off it. And then do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again. Don't have 20 properties that you have mortgages on that you're barely covering the mortgages with rental payments, and if you lose two or three tenants, you're sunk. Don't do that. Don't use credit cards, right? Solid, solid advice in many levels. My only big difference is this. Just buy your investments and the sky's not falling ever and stay and ride it out. That's a personal decision. Understand that. That's my personal view. You may believe that, and that's okay for you if that's what you believe. You make the final decision in everything that you do. Understand that as well. But my point with the Dave Ramsey thing is when you're looking for an advisor, ask him if he's a fan of Dave Ramsey. And my advice to you is find yourself a good, solid Dave Ramsey fan. Now, he's still going to try to push you into every, you know, 15% into retirement, right, which may be more than you need to be doing, because you may want to keep some portion liquid, right, beyond what this guy's telling you. And he'll, you know, even if, you know, he might say, you know, you want to do this, but Dave would say, you see, you know what Dave would say, whatever, I listen to him every day, I know, right? You do what I tell you, you work for me. Advise me, give me my options, and then let me make the decision, right? But you find a Dave Ramsey fan, that's going to be a lot easier to do. Remember, again, the final decision and everything that you do. When you make an execute order to buy or sell something, to put money somewhere, to sign off a contract, it's yours. You can't blame your advisor for your decisions. You can't blame me for your decisions, and you can't blame your Uncle Ray for your decisions. In the end, you have to make your decisions. Your advisor's job is to bring you the information and help you gain what you want out of your investments. In the end, you have to make your own decision. If you're not comfortable making your own decision, figure out how to get comfortable making your own decision. If you're not comfortable with it, it probably means that the investment's not right for you. When you find the right investments that meet your risk tolerance level, you will be comfortable with them. Don't ever make an emotional decision. Don't let a broker get you excited about an opportunity. If you're excited about an investment, do not invest in it at that second. Go back and evaluate it. Get a prospectus. Read it. Make him explain to you why it's important. Think about it for a day. If it doesn't seem like a good investment a day from now, it probably isn't. All right? Next thing, diversify more than you are advised to. These guys talk a good game with diversification. The way they pull it off in practice is often kind of limited and weak. And what I mean by diversify more than advised, I mean I own some gold. And I mean some hard, tangible gold that I can go put my hands on. Not a massive amount, but, you know, a reasonable amount. And I have some cash. And those things are not kept in my house because my house could burn down or be burglarized or be destroyed in a tornado, and even a cash box may not be sufficient to protect them. So they're in a safety deposit box at a bank. I also have some silver there. I also do have some cash at the house that is there in case we have an immediate need for cash. And I keep that securely locked up in a firebox and put somewhere where it would be very difficult for it to be burglarized. But it's a very small amount relative to my whole. Unlike most advisors would tell you, I consider those things part of my investment portfolio. All right. I also advise people to stock up on food. Food goes up quickly with inflation. all right? And that's part of good, solid, everyday survival planning is having, you know, first a month and then eventually a six-month supply of reserve foodstuffs. Stuff that you eat anyway. Canned goods that you eat anyway. Dry foodstuffs that you eat anyway, okay? The things that you eat anyway in a garden that's producing vegetables that I don't have to buy. To me, that's part of my investment allocation because that food is going to cost me less today than it will in 6 months. And your advisor might say, well, if you're buying it all the time, then, you know, it's not really hedging because you're buying the same amount. It's like trying to get ahead with the gasoline market. No, it's not. No, it's not, because what happens is over time, you start figuring out different ways to continue to grow the duration of reserves that you have. Some foods last for a year or 2 years. Those foods can be, you know, you can have a reserve supply on that goes up to maybe close to that long. So that I also consider an investment. I consider my savings that's in bank accounts. I have more than one bank account in more than one bank. Those savings accounts that are hard cash, that I can go get whenever I want, I consider part of my investment portfolio. All right? So, you know, there's that. Now, the other side of that is I'm telling you, I believe in foreign investments. You have to decide whether you believe that or not. And I don't just mean a mutual fund that invests in foreign companies. I believe in holding some money in some foreign currencies. All right, some solid currencies. Not going to tell you which ones because, again, I'm not an advisor. It's not my place here. My point to you is do your own research. Learn about these alternative investment strategies. Even if it's a couple thousand dollars worth of some other currency, in another country's bank would be one way. Another way would just simply be to buy government-issued bonds by a foreign government with a strong currency and a strong economy. These are all things that can be done. And had you allocated some money that way, the actual falling of the dollar would have made you money. That's called foreign currency exchange rate investing. That's something else you can look at. All I'm saying is to make it very clear to these guys when you're talking to them, I want my portfolio extremely diverse. All right? I want to do the best I can in all of these buckets. All right? First, I'm bucketing retirement, mid to short-term investing, cash, all right, hard assets, real estate. All right? That's my first bucket. My second set of buckets is inside each one of those, how do I allocate it in there? All right? And I want tremendous diversification. Make sure that these guys understand that. Another thing I'm going to throw in that I didn't have in my little outline here is don't let them sell you life insurance. Get yourself an independent life insurance agent that only sells life insurance that doesn't do investing. These investment vehicle life insurance policies, there's people, the uber wealthy that we talked about that get the best advisors, there's ways that they can make it work for the average person. Life insurance is just probably not a good way to blend it with your investments. Insure your death with one guy, insure your future with another, all right? Another thing to understand is never permit your advisor to use the following word. This is going to be my final piece of advice on this. Allow. I wouldn't allow you to invest that way. I wouldn't allow you to make that decision. I wouldn't allow you to come out of that fund right now. Anything like that. Again, I've got to stress this, they work for you. Manage them like an employee. If you walked into your office and you told an employee, I want you to take care of this today, and he said, well, I'm not going to allow you to do that, you would fire his ass now. I'm not saying the first time you hear that come from your financial advisor, you fire them. All right? It's something that's in their head. Again, it's a way they're programmed that they're protecting you. They don't see it as being negative. But the minute you hear the word allow or anything like it, say, you know what? Here's the deal. You don't permit, allow, etc. Give me permission to do anything. All right? That's not how this relationship works. What you need to do is you give me your advice. I'll listen to it. I'll think about it. I'll make a decision, and you act upon it. Do we understand each other, or do I need to find someone that understands that? Don't be afraid to talk to an advisor that way. This is your employee again. Manage them that way. So I hope this has been helpful to you, and I want to explain something. I don't care if right now you're sitting here going, man, this wasn't the greatest podcast for me because I just don't have investments. I don't have a lot of money. I have a hard time scraping up $50. Folks, this is for everybody. The one thing these guys are right about is they'll tell you the time to start investing is today. No matter what state you are in life, the time to invest and save money is now. I just don't necessarily always agree with the way that they envision that savings taking place. But I've always talked about this before. If you don't have enough income, raise your income. There's ways to do it. There's ways to raise your income. Work harder. Get a second job. Build a part-time business. Go out and blog for money. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do. Increase your income. Take the income that you increase, and for a certain amount of time, invest 100% of it. You know, if you live without it up till now, and then you go out and you start working for more, invest it. I've had people already call me and say, hey, on the blog, and say, hey, Jack, there's no way. You know, I'm working my brains out right now. They won't give me a raise. The economy sucks. I live in small town America. Blah, 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 blah. You know what? Call Domino's Pizza or Pizza Hut or Papa John's Pizza and say, I got a car and I want to go deliver pizzas for you. Call 4 or 5 pizza places and see if you don't get a part-time job. Tell them I only want to work Friday evenings and Saturday afternoons. They'll probably still give you a job. Go out and you can make $20, $30 an hour delivering pizzas today on tips. Do a good job. Be nice. Smile to people. That's not for you. Figure out it. I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and deliver pizzas. And I got that from Dave Ramsey, okay? But I'm saying that's one way. So when you tell me there isn't a way, I'm just saying, well, here's one. You know, go get a job as a bartender or a waitress. You know, they make good money too on tips. That's not the greatest industry in the world right now. People are cutting back. But there is money to be made for those that work hard. You know, I know people that worked part-time for Federal Express at night and put themselves completely through college and came out with no college tuition debt. You know, no student loans. So there's that. There's always a place for people that are willing to work to make some extra money. So if you need to build at least, you know, that buffer, the few thousand dollars that's there if the world blows up around you, go do it. Go do whatever it takes. Then start putting together an asset program. Start buying, you know, start saving up to buy that piece of real estate that you want that'll eventually get you out of the city. If that's what you want. Or start figuring out how to pay off what you have so you can stay in the city and live the best life you can. My point is there's always a way. There's always a way. It's up to you to figure out what works best for you. And with your advice, your advisor and your financial investments, there's always a way to do a good job. It's up to you to work with him, to manage him, to hire the right one, and to accept responsibility to get it done in the best way for you. So I hope today's podcast has been helpful, and I'm going to do some other cool ones next week. I'm going to go back next week I'm going to get out of politics, I'm going to get out of money. I'm going to probably kill this guy that just cut me off here and made me near run into his back end. But I actually managed not to swear there. Anyway, I'm going to go into things like next week we're going to talk about seed saving for survival gardeners. We're going to talk about different heirloom seed varieties and some really cool stuff that's out there that you can be growing that you can't just find randomly in the grocery store a lot of times. And we're going to talk about some other things that you can do just to prepare for more of the regional type disasters that are actually possible, because I know a lot of people that subscribe to the podcast are interested in things like that. The other thing I'm going to do is we're over 100 listeners now. I'm going to try on Monday or Tuesday to announce my 1,000 listener goal plan and tell you about a prize that you'll be able to win by helping me do that. Again, this is Jack Spear with the Survival Podcast. Be sure to drop by our site, our blog, and comment on these episodes at thesurvivalpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you, and I hope everybody has a wonderful day.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.